updated. Last week we shared about fear, bhaya. Sanskrit and the Pali word is the same, bhaya. And that was recorded, and that'll be soon on the website as well. And as usual, there were other things I wanted to share that we didn't have the time. And so today we'll continue that. So what it is I wanted to share connected to fear and fearlessness, abhaya. Are the five remembrances. So, because when you think about the five remembrances, the way we live our lives is directly in opposite of those five remembrances. And a lot of it comes from, we hold fear with them, yeah? And last week we talked about just the individual fear, fear that's healthy, right? Not getting burnt, heat, fire. That fear response is to withdraw the hand. That's good. Some of us learn it, some of us don't learn it. or we learn it really late. If someone's about to cause us harm, that response of removing ourselves, asking for help, letting them know that's not okay, that's a good response, actually. And then there's the fear from the socialized form of fear of us believing what it is we who we are, who we should be. What makes us right, right? The whole culture of white supremacy, white is right, right? And living in fear, this internalized way that we have taken that up, that harms not only people of color, it harms non-folks of color too. Living into a superiority complex, that's very difficult, that. And so what all that brings up to, the fear, right? So there's different kinds of ways and fears and emotions that come with that. The fear of thinking that I'm worthwhile because of the color of my skin, that's a hard thing to live with. Or because I'm a male, bodied person, that's what makes me worthwhile, that's what purposes me. It's one of the reasons that as men age, there's so much depression, because all that stands for manhood and male begins to deteriorate. And then that whole definition of manhood, when it starts to move away, what's left? That's a really good way to think about what it means to live, a resting purpose and resting worth on something that is not inward. That's a biological construct in the case of male and the society's definition of that, right? It's these external socialized norms of what these things mean, the gendered hierarchy, the racial, ethnic, cultural hierarchy, the sexual orientation hierarchy, to live with an identity that purposes me based on being socialized to say that because of this identity, I'm good, I'm better, I'm worthwhile. And the fear around that, as that changes as that shifts. So age is a good one. When we think about what society puts on age, because as we age and we become ill, we don't know what to do with this body. And we just, as a society, we just cannot, we live in fear, right? All the gimmicks, and well, maybe some of them are, well, there's a lot of them are gimmicks, right? Eating healthy is not a gimmick. It's simply, how do you stay healthy? How do you live a long life that's also maybe not as much suffering, right? But there are so many gimmicks around not aging. So the five remembrances is a really good way, a very deep Buddhist teaching, many layers, of a really scaffolding life. And really, the root of it is, the underpinning of the five remembrances is the three characteristics, right? Permanent suffering and non-self. So they're all connected. That's a beautiful thing about the teachings, is they all are connected with each other. And then presented in this other way. So it's like, oh, okay, I understand it more. Remembrances, or the five inevitables, as some traditions or lineages call it. Whatever remembrances. I know y'all know this. The one we just talked about, the aging. I am of the grow old. There is no way that we're not going to grow old. But yet we live in fear. Maybe in our 20s. Our 30s, not yet, but then as we get into the 40s and 50s, and then I think then the fear around that, because it means so much. Society puts a, only now are we starting to talk about the wisdom of the elders. In some cultures, it's always been the wisdom of the elders. But in upstart United States of America, you know, creating its own cultural norms, eldering, might as well put the person, you know, put the person out the pasture, right? Like there's real connotation of what aging is. And so we live in fear of that. I am of the nature to become ill. There is no escaping ill health. It's inevitable. That's why they call it the inevitables. And some teachers used to say you should print these and put them, like make it really clear, like keep them around you. Because if we keep living with these and we see how a lot of what we do rests on fear of these things, these fear of these inevitables. Why? Because we forget about life is changing and impermanent. So our meditation today was about breathing out, I am not limited by the body. I'm not limited by perceptions. I'm not limit. So this, the way this body and mind, the aggregates, the five aggregates, we are not limited. We are beyond that. So when we practice and we understand, then these five remembrances become easy to accept and understand. And then they become wise ways to live life. Because we accept and understand the impermanent nature of this form, of this mind. Thank you, Rhonda. The third one, I am of the nature to die. There is no escaping death. And now I know For some folks might be thinking like, why, this is part of that. Why is Buddhism so negative? In fact, I would turn it around and I would say, why is Buddhism so wise? And the sooner we understand and live into these teachings, the sooner we get beyond the suffering that comes from grasping and being in fear of them, right? I'm of the nature, it's inevitable that I will age. It's inevitable that I will become ill. It may be sooner, it may be later. But this human form is of that nature. I am of the nature to die, to transition into something else. In fact, the day we are born, we are heading into that transition. Birth begets death. And it's not something that, oh my God, or oh my Buddha, this is, what am I going to do? This is so sad. Let me prepare. And yet, there is a way that once we remember the Buddha, in seeing the one of the messengers, the holy messengers, was death, was an ill person, old person, and a corpse that awakened him that there has, what else is there? Is it just these things? And the meditation, I am not limited to these things. I am more. These things are impermanent. There is change. If I understand change, I do not suffer so much. If I don't cling to this separate single self as this one entity here, I don't suffer so much. All that is dear to me, I will have to let go of. And all to whom I am dear, they will have to let go. That's the fourth one. We cannot hold onto anything. We cannot. It just will change. That's why the roots of the five remembrances are the three characteristics, the impermanence, and the understanding that there will be suffering from the loss. So no one's pretending that there's not going to be suffering. The question is, how do we suffer? Do we learn from the suffering? Do we transform the suffering into wisdom? Do we even see what comes from the suffering? Are we able to take the loss of someone precious to us or the end of a relationship and see how it brought us to this space and who we are? Can we celebrate what was learned and gained and how we became a different person from that interaction? Or how we help the way they showed up. And so, are we able to be spacious enough to hold at the root the truth of these characteristics and let that help us take care of what happened so we don't suffer so much, right? The first and the second arrow. So, the inevitables are like the first arrow. Because when we're ill and we're in pain and there's nothing joyful, right? It's that moment, it's a difficulty. But the fear and the story that we build around it, because we don't have these remembrances in mind, those are the second arrows, and we build the story. We build the story. Why couldn't they stay? Why did we have to break up? Why did they have to do this? Why did I, all the story that continues, the suffering grows. So the Buddhist teachings are so deep and wise. And because we can acknowledge the hurt and the grief, the loss, because this person brought brightness into our lives. Or there was something very beautiful that came from the engagement. And we learned so much, or the energy allowed us to bring something forth in ourselves that may not have been nurtured. And then how do we hold that and take good care of that? That's the living in presence. So that when we're in that relationship, we're enjoying it and we're fully present for it. Ah, I'm blossoming right now because I'm with this person, because their energy, it enlightens me. It makes me more than I am when I'm not with them. And letting that sink in and just be so lovely. So we don't have the regrets when the relationship ends, or and we go to the fighting and the hatred and the anger. And so the teachings inviting us into being present for every moment, it's what allows, when the impermanence continues, to be able to still enjoy what was, without clinging to it and being able to let it go. Why? Because this was inevitable. Everything changes. Being in some lineages, the fourth is, we are of the nature to be with those we don't want to be with and not be with those we want to be with. We really know that's true, right? How many times are we in a meeting or somewhere where we're like, I just can't wait to get out of here. And then what are we doing? We're thinking about where else we would prefer to be. And there's a, I don't want to be here, I want to be there. So this inevitability of, this is the life we're in. We're going to be around people who don't make us happy, push our buttons. But that's part of it. We are of the nature to be around those we don't want to be around and not be around those because of the way. Now there's going to come a time in our practice where we understand how to be with that. And we know how to take good care of that without causing ourselves harm. Yeah, without causing ourselves harm. And the last one is the only thing we leave is the actions. So the fancy car, the big house, whatever it is that, you know, doesn't mean you don't have the fancy car or the big house. It just means you can't take it with you. What you do take is the result, the action, what we call karma, right? Some people in some cultures say, the way you make me feel. I remember hearing that sometime when an elder passed in my family, and someone said, I always remember how she made me feel. And it wasn't a romantic, intimate, it was just the person's presence, what they brought into the space. They brought this lightness, this caring, this kindness. Our actions is really all that we leave and we take the result of. And it's not just like a big action either. It's everything in Buddhism that we discuss as action, which is thought, word, and the physical activity that we engage in. So even the thought, that's why this practice, you see how it's all interrelated? That's why this practice is so important and beautiful. Because our practice of mindfulness is one that brings us into presence. What am I thinking now? I'm about to say something. But even before we say it, it happens so quickly. We think it and it goes right to the map. So mindfulness allows us this pause, this elongation of the whole thing. And so we choose, with the practice, we get to choose, am I going to speak what I was thinking? I remember my trainings, this is good, this is unkind, this is gossip, this will harm. Oh no, I'm not going to speak it. Oh yes, this is kind, I will speak it. In the midst of speaking it, is this kind? Should I continue speaking it? Yeah, okay. Afterward, was that kind, what I just said? Okay, I can repeat that. Oh no, you know, I could see that person, you know, maybe that wasn't so kind. Maybe I need to investigate that. So maybe I won't speak that way again. And so we're creating the karma, our actions, right? So the first ones that we get to sort of notice and change if we want, is a physical outward action. And then the next one are the words. But usually and often the last one is the thinking. The one that nobody sees, because the words and the action, we have like audience, and you know how it is, you know, when we're around people, we kind of adjust our behavior a little bit. We were in a meeting this Friday with Valar, or with some neighbors who have problems with us. And we've heard what they say about us when it's only their group. Because one of our members is also part of that. And then we had a meeting to kind of start to build, to listen to each other, to understand each other more. And most people were silent. Nobody said anything unkind directly to us. And so after the meeting, we were processing, and someone said, what happened to all the stuff they were saying? Everybody was quiet. So that's kind of the benefit of being in public, is the word and the actions, the physical action, change when we have some kind of scrutiny. But what we're thinking is the last one. And that's what mindfulness is so important, because mindfulness is the awareness of the thought. So mindfulness is like that public circle. I see you, my little thought, about things. I'm thinking this about you, my little thought. I'm not saying it. So my public has helped me. So mindfulness is that. Mindfulness is like, I see you. But most of us don't have that mindfulness all the time. And so the thought goes kind of, you know, into its own, and it, you know, like that. And so this practice is what really helps us, not just with the first four. It helps us dramatically with the fifth remembrance. Of how are we going to be in this world? Everything counts. Every thought counts. It's kind of scary because then if you start thinking mindfully, every thought I've ever had, there's a karmic resonance for it. Ooh-wee. And yet, this is our practice. That's why it's a training and a practice, is we continuously keep mindfulness right there in front. So it helps us. So we don't become afraid of it. We don't fear, oh, I'm so terrible, I think these things. No, it's a taken care of. Oh, my little anger, I see you. Oh, I'm thinking this way because I'm hurt. Okay, I'm hurt now. Okay, why am I hurt? I'm hurt because this reminds me of this, and I think they may mean this. Okay, well, did they really mean that? That's the perception part, right? Perceiving the kind of proliferating mind. Well, we didn't really know, but we thought so because that's what happened one time. Okay, well, but do we know? No, okay. Well, maybe I should let that go because I don't really know. Okay. So then we change the perception. And then maybe the thinking changes. Oh, yeah, okay. So I don't really know. Well, then maybe I shouldn't have this thought like that about this person because I really don't know. Okay. Okay, let me breathe and let that go. Oh, wow, I notice my body, my shoulders just relax when I just let that go because that thinking moved me into a place of vigilance and trauma again. And that cycle. And so now my mindfulness has helped me to become more aware. And now I make a different decision. And so we don't judge ourselves. Oh, I'm so bad I had that thought. No, it's really, oh, wow, this thought's here. Let me take care of this. All right, no, I can't. Okay. It's all right. It's cool. The next time I have a sitting period, the next time I'm walking slowly, I can take some time to stop and reflect on that. But that moment, that mindful moment, allowed us to decide, maybe I need to hold this. Maybe that's not, you know, my fear made me just move into this, so down this road, which is maybe not where I, maybe where it needs to go. Because the perceptions, I remember Sister Chan Kong said once, I think it was like 70% of our perceptions are wrong, false. I've heard other people say it's more. Because we live in this continuous cycle of living from old things because we're not able to stop and reflect what is here now. And also reflect without fear that we're bad people because we think in certain ways, or we're bad because we're angry at this person, or we're bad because all the stories that are not just here, our own individual stories, but connected to what we talked about last week, the socialization of who we've been told we are. Or as Black people, we're always violent. So that's why I had this thought, because, and then the story, right? Then it goes, but we may not even connect it to that socialization part of it because we're so caught up in the moment. So I think I'll stop there. It's so we have some time for Dharma sharing. There's more around fear. We'll come back to it. We've come to it in previous years, and it's a time of a lot of fear right now in the society. And so we really want to not stay with the outward things that are getting through the statements, the newspaper highlights that's triggering us, re-triggering us. We want to breathe and we want to notice what about that is touching my own fears that may or may have nothing to do with that. It may, and it may not. And it helps us, invites us into taking care of what is in here. Because some people will see that same headline and have no response to it. And we'll see it and we'll have this huge response. And so why is it that something can cause so many different impact depending on who it is? So that's why we need to really think about who we are. What is it that we're bringing into the table? What are we bringing? What fears? And let them not nourish us. so we can meet this world that is in chaos in a very different way. Thank you for listening.